Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Kaya Biz.
Inside your business.
And as highlighted, we are reflecting on a key story that made headlines this past weekend. It has been a long time coming, but was it necessary? The demise of Murray and Roberts, the historic South African company shutting down after more than 120 years of operating in the construction industry. To tell us more about this, we're joined by a respected colleague within the industry, at Currency News, Rob Rose, to give us some insight into the deep digging analysis and perspective that he's pulled together from industry experts on this story. Rob, such a pleasure to touch base with you again. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great to be here.
I'm excited to speak to you, Rob, because, goodness, as I said, this is probably one of those stories that you reflect on and I'm still in awe. I'm still in shock. And I guess we just need to put things into perspective as to how, I can't say precedent setting, but how significant the news headlines around Murray and Roberts at the moment is. I know it doesn't come as a surprise, but it certainly does come as a shock and a sense of sadness for members of the business community.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, as it should. I mean, this is a business that started in 1902. And as you said in your preview of this, I mean, this basically, they built South Africa. They built the Carlton. They built all the bridges in the Cape. They built, you know, the Cape Town Stadium. These guys were, they had a motto which said, "We are Murray and Roberts. We are South Africa." It was its slogan. And that I think, really just captured what they were. I mean, all the big projects went to Murray and Roberts. They were the aristocrat of the construction sector. And then it completely folded. I mean, after the World Cup, things started to go badly for them.
Yeah.
And they lost 99% of their share price. And ultimately, you know, we're here now.
Yeah. And you're quite right. A lot of the activity and downfall of the business came post the 2010 World Cup, where there was also an identification of the fact that there were collusive activities between many of the construction companies. But I'm keen for you just to give us a quick snapshot of their history. As you've mentioned, Murray and Roberts, really well respected within the industry. But this business had very humble beginnings, grew to great prominence, and at some point actually had the highest market cap of construction companies on the JSE.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It began, you know, like a small company in the Western Cape, sort of taking on small projects, and it then merged. I think it was it Douglas Murray, and they basically just grew and grew, and then they listed on the stock exchange and grew to become, you know, at their peak, they were one of the top 40 companies on the stock exchange, which seems incredible today to think that, you know, they're basically now in liquidation, and that was quite recently, and it was a series of, you know, a series of bad moments for them. I think the World Cup was the height of where they were, you know, 2009, when they built the Cape Town Stadium. But then after that, the allegations of collusion with the other firms didn't help them. And then COVID came 10 years later, and it just, you know, put a cap on the descent of Murray and Roberts to where they were. I mean, they've made strategic errors. You talked about, you know, investment school. They made a couple of big errors along the way. But mm-hmm. The fact is, we've had so many big construction companies like Group 5 and Basil Reed go the same way. So it does indicate a huge weakness amongst all these firms.
Definitely. And maybe let's go there, right? Post the 2010 World Cup, we're well aware that Murray and Roberts, like many other companies within the construction space, had to pay fines following investigations from the Competition Commission. And after 300 million rand that was paid, I understand, from M&R specifically, one would have thought that things would have gotten better. But South Africa's economy also didn't perform too strongly post the World Cup. Did this also play an influence in some of the investment decisions taken at the entity?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, what happened with a lot of these is that they expected government to spend more on infrastructure, because government kept talking about it. We're going to spend money on infrastructure and build new train stations, build new train tracks, build new, you know, all kinds of things, roads, and then that just never actually happened. And then we had a decade where GDP growth was less than 1%. And I think that a lot of these companies had factored in huge increases, and their contracts had factored this in. And then ultimately, you know, contracts ran late. You had things coming into our environment like the construction mafia, which didn't help any of these companies. And the result was that many of these companies got a price for them and ended up carrying a huge cost themselves. And that ultimately tipped them over. And that was the wider sector. And then you had company-specific issues like at Murray and Roberts. Mm-hmm. In their particular case, for example, they had money which they'd got, and they decided to invest more in Australia in an oil and gas company. And the problem with that was when the oil price was, you know, $140 a barrel, like absolute peak.
Sure.
And from there, the oil industry collapsed. So, you know, you put more money into the oil and gas industry at the absolute peak, and then the oil price collapsed, and that just didn't help. You know, so that's a strategic error that was on Murray and Roberts. But equally, it was a very weak industry, and that's partly because of the expectations around government spending that just never happened.
Got you on that one. The expansion to Australia, the first time I probably got to know and understand Murray and Roberts a lot deeper as a financial journalist was when Henry Lars was the chief executive of the business at the time, and a strong position in terms of growth and ambition that he had highlighted. And I'm just keen, you know, if we do take a look at the evolution of the leadership aligned to the evolution of the business, do we find that there was just a series of bad decisions made or poor decisions made by several of the leaders, or do a few stand out more than others?
You know, Henry Lars is still the CEO, or he was last time I spoke to him a few months ago. And you know, there were bad strategic decisions made. And the thing is, if you speak to various of the former CEOs of the company, they will point to all the errors made by Henry Lars. And one particular one stands out. It was when the German company Aton arrived, it was in 2016, and offered to buy Murray and Roberts for 15 rand a share. And Murray and Roberts' board, led by Henry Lars, fought this and said, no, it's worth much more than that. And ultimately, if shareholders had got 15 rand a share at the time, you know, it's a lot more than the 0000 they're getting now. So it's, you know, it's there are lots of those decisions you can look back on and say, well, things could have been very, very different.
Definitely. If we do take a look at the overview of many other construction companies that have met their demise, as you've mentioned, you listed the likes of Basil Reed and a few others. Almost seems as though there's some particular patterns. The over-reliance on the mining sector, perhaps investing in markets that they didn't fully operate. And again, just timing. In your conversations with many analysts, what are some of the common themes that they allude to leading to the failure of Murray and Roberts and many other businesses in construction?
Well, I think a lot of them speak to contract management. The fact that a lot of these companies had underpriced for potential issues. They chased business, you know, because they were big projects. Like, for example, building Medupi and Kusile, those big power stations for Eskom. So you chase those big contracts, you then get them, where, you know, various issues come up and things have to be redone and there are huge delays in it. So I think contract management skills are part of the big issue. A lot of these construction companies struggled because they underpriced for potential contracts and then found themselves carrying the losses. I mean, at the last half-year stage, I think Murray and Roberts made a total loss of 1.4 billion. And part of that is the kind of the legacy of bad contracts that they're still having to pay for. And that's what you see with Basil Reed, and that's what you see with Group 5 too, is that it's just bad and very optimistic contract management skills. You know, guys expected contracts to do better than they did, but I think, you know, as everyone says in business, hope isn't a strategy. Mm. You can't just hope things are going to work out well. You've got to kind of price for the downside, which I suppose any CEOs that you speak to are mostly very optimistic people who think things are going to work out. But I suppose your lawyers are there to cover you when they don't work out. And I think a lot of what happened relates to that. And then, you know, like you said, you can't really price for a country whose GDP just hasn't moved in 10 years. It's gone backwards, actually, with population growth and various other things. And that's a very difficult situation for any business to be in, never mind businesses that are fragile anyway, like the construction sector.
Yeah. Rob, I'm keen to understand, you know, and even through your experience as a journalist, reputation. How much of it plays a factor into the perceptions investors have, but perhaps even, you know, members of your community? And I ask this because post the 2010 World Cup collusion struggle and saga that was revealed, Murray and Roberts also had a headline where a bridge on the M1 had collapsed and actually injured at least 19 people and claimed two lives back in 2019. And it almost seems as though they couldn't just shake off the shadow of negativity or a negative reputation in the market. Did this play a factor at all?
Look, I think that hasn't helped them along the way. I mean, you have a situation where you have a government and a state that clearly isn't keen to bail you out or grant you concessions when you have been, you know, in their eyes, found guilty of colluding on contracts, of not doing the right thing, of taking shortcuts. And that really doesn't help them. And I think that's for investors, things started to go wrong after the World Cup when they realized that Marion Roberts had made the wrong strategic decisions and had been underpricing for various things. So then your faith in the financial side of a business that had been providing stellar returns until then gets, you know, weakened significantly. And I think from there, to retain the trust of investors was always going to be tough, never mind rebuilding it. And then you had, you know, finally, Google, you had COVID. And yes. And COVID saw so many building projects just completely put on ice. And I think that was, you know, for companies that were already on the margin and were struggling with getting trust back from the investment community, from government and from others who want to build, that was just that tipped over the most fragile companies. And there are very few construction companies that are doing particularly well at the moment. Mm. So it's a difficult thing, but it's definitely, you know, you're right. It's a case study. I think digging deeper into this, why this happened and what could have been done differently.
Yeah. As you say, many investors saying this was avoidable, I'm assuming. Is that the concluding remark from many of the analysts you've spoken to?
Yeah. A lot of them said that this was entirely avoidable. They could have certainly made different decisions when it came to putting the money into Australia at that particular time. They could have made different decisions regarding the foreign takeover offer. And then they could have handled, when it became clear that the contract mispricing was really hurting them, they could have done a bit to renegotiate those contracts and certainly put in place certain clauses in their new contracts that didn't hurt them as much. So it comes down to fundamental risk management. And the perception from people is, you know, that there was much more that could have been done. I mean, you obviously got to take that with a grain of salt. People will always say in retrospect,
yeah.
In hindsight, this is clear. And at the time, it's probably harder to see when you're running a company that where things are going wrong. And then you can also think, well, you know, we just need to get this money in terms of, you know, the state infrastructure spending, and that just never arrived. So pinning your hopes on something that didn't happen at a time when things are hitting you from all sides is difficult, but certainly with hindsight, you can say there were some big, big errors made.
Yeah. Rob, we can't ignore the fact that Marion Roberts had acquired a business back in 2006 called Concor. And later, many might say that the spirit of the business lives on in construction because there's Concor Construction, a division of the operations that they sold as well to a black-owned consortium and renamed it Concor Construction. I'm linking this to a comment that one of our listeners shared with me earlier this morning. And he said, Googs, Marion Roberts is just an old strategy used by others similar to them. Liquidate and resurface as a new or old outfit. I'm not too sure if you've had any feedback from some of your colleagues and analysts as well on this one, but is this just, I guess, you know, a business that will resurface in a different nature or has already done so given the establishment of Concor?
I mean, yeah, that's a view that a lot of people have put forward, and I think that that's true. The heart of Marion Roberts, the construction business that built these fantastic, epic buildings you mentioned, the Sun Cities and these amazing bridges. They built the Burj Al Arab, that building in Dubai that looks like the Sail. It's an iconic building worldwide. So they do have a huge reputation. And this was Concor was the building division, which is the heart of the business. Mm. You know, a couple of years ago, Marion Roberts decided to get out of construction and go into mining and oil and gas. And to some extent, that mining business is what's been bought by another group of investors called Differential. So what you have getting liquidated right now is just the shell that's left. So the real business still lives on in Concor. So I think that is true. I mean, I think they should rename Concor as Marion Roberts. They should take the name and keep it alive. Mm. They could do that right now.
Sure. Yeah, there's so much to explore about the story. Rob, definitely makes for a great dinner party discussion and a thesis for anyone in a business class, business school.
Well, not if you're Henry Lars. You probably don't want to discuss this too
right?
much.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, not very favorable for him. But to close off with, for those who were curious, what happens now? For those who might not be familiar with the liquidation process, comes to shareholders, existence of the business, registration on CIPC, what evolves now?
Yeah, well, I mean, from here, essentially, the shareholders will probably get very little out of this in the end. I mean, you could find another company buying the actual shell on the JSC and putting a new business into there. So it might be revived in another form entirely. But I think the essence of Murray & Roberts, that old shell company is now dead. And from there, it'll just be wrapped up. And if there is any dividend to shareholders, it'll get distributed. But I wouldn't think there'll be too much. And, you know, I think a lot of the shareholders would have sold by now. I mean, this is a company that fell 99% in the last 10 years. Yeah. You know, so if you had, you know, 10,000 Rand, you would have, you know, 100 Rand now, which is not great.
Oof, not great at all. Jeesh, yeah. We know that investments are about risk and risk mitigation, but jeesh, yeah. You win some and you lose some. Rob, thank you so much, though, for taking us on an educational journey just to understand a lot more about key South African businesses, some who do incredibly well and others who, like Murray & Roberts, have met their demise. Thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Rob Rose is editor at Currency News. You'd also be very familiar with a lot of the work that he's done regarding Stein Heist, the demise of Steinhoff, several conversations we've had here on the show as well. And if you haven't watched the documentary or even read the book, do so. Because again, it's a wonderful way of learning from some of the failures of South African businesses, leadership, and questionable outcomes that unfortunately do hurt us as investors, but also have a terrible impact on the economy. If you take a look at the ripple effects. Share your thoughts with us, 063-688-0959. If you have any comments or feedback, do share your voice notes. Happy for you to interact as well on social media. The tweet that I got earlier on, the post on X from Freddy Letswalo, commenting on the Murray & Roberts liquidation, saying, it's already a new outfit. Quite keen to get your thoughts there, Freddy. Or anyone else who might work within the construction industry. Happy for you to stay anonymous. Share your thoughts and your views. 063-688-0959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.